Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Pateo Radio, brought to you for the first time via Vining Voices Radio. The special guest of tonight's episode is from Australia, and he's here with us. His name is Max Egan. Max, can you please introduce yourself to the listeners?
It's a pleasure to be here, folks. Thank you very much for asking me onto the show. I have a website called thecrowhouse.com, and you can find out all about me there.
Yeah, I've seen your video you made, The Bigger Picture. I think it was in 2009, if I'm correct. And yeah, I think it was a really, really fascinating video you made there, because you indeed show the bigger picture. Can you explain a little bit about that video and how you came about to making it?
Okay, well, that was actually the first film that I made. I made that because I just thought, well, look, I've got all this information and I should get it out to people. And mm-hmm. I kind of discovered YouTube. I saw what YouTube was. Before that point, I thought YouTube was a place that, you know, kids uploaded their high school videos and stuff, you know. But I found that there was a whole alternate media on YouTube. And I thought, well, I've got all this information, so I can do this. So I just put it all out there and made that film to try to sort of put something in a nutshell for people, because I see a lot of disinformation on the internet, and there's a lot of convoluted rabbit holes out there, and I thought, well, it would be good if I could get all the information and gather it down into one concise story to present the big picture of what's going on. So that's what I did. It took me about, about 3 or 4 months to make, not very long, and I didn't really expect anyone to watch it. I only actually made half of it, and didn't really expect anybody to be watching it. But then I started getting all these emails from people asking where the rest of the film was. So I figured, well, people actually are watching it. So I finished the film and put it out there. And it led to what I'm doing now, because I made that film. So it was quite synchronistic, really.
Exactly, very synchronistic. Yeah, and talking about synchronism. I was also doing the same kind of project in the Netherlands, but I didn't make a beautiful video like you did. I just gave a presentation and somebody recorded it and put some pictures from a presentation in it. So it was also nice to watch. But I think many people have the kind of urge to understand how big is in fact that big picture and what is related to what and how can we understand it. I think there was also your desire to make this movie, this video.
Well, yeah, you know, just so people can see what we've got here, you know. What we've got really is a global corporatocracy, I suppose you'd call it, you know, which is taking over this planet. And it's very important that people pay attention to what's going on. And I thought, well, if I can present it in a nutshell and let people know that there is a problem and that it's time for people to pay attention, because we can fix this problem, then, you know, maybe I can do something good for the world. So that's what I did. I mean, it's got to a stage where it's become necessary to speak out. It really has. We've got a situation here and we need to deal with it. And it's only going to happen if the people can rediscover the power that we have. And that's what I've tried to do ever since day one. And when I really stepped back and looked at the world, I just thought it was necessary to make that film. And I actually remade it. I made that film, then I made two other ones after it, two short films. And then I did a compilation of all of those three films and released it called The Calling, which was another attempt. It was basically the same message, but it was an attempt to aim the message towards a different audience and try to get as many people on board as possible. And that's what I've been doing for the last 6 years. I really think we do have a situation here. But ultimately, there's only really one problem. And that's the corruption of the system itself. See, all the little problems that we're facing, whether it be homelessness, whether it be starvation, whether it be wars, coal seam gas mining, Fukushima, chemtrails, whatever it is you want to deal with, I believe all of these things are symptoms of the corruption of the system itself. And I believe that corruption exists because we don't know who we are. And so that's where the focus has to be for the population to rediscover themselves.
Exactly. I understand who human beings actually really are and what is our role on this planet and most of all how the powers that be are, maybe the powers that were, try to give us an impression that something is totally different.
Well, you know,
what I really like
Well, they've taught us to not respect ourselves and to not respect others. That's the problem. We've got to respect ourselves. That's the thing. That's when all the things will break down. That's when all the barriers will break down. Once we really begin to respect ourselves and respect those around us, see each other as equal. When we do that, it's game, set, and match.
Exactly. And we will not be allowing the divide and conquer strategy to work anymore. Can we, just to give an example, can you show us your ideas about what's going on in Syria? Because let me give a little start here. I thought it was really clear that they wanted to start a war there with a false flag. But somehow the war has not started yet. So, and I've seen also you made a video about the whole situation there. So can you please share us your light on this situation?
Well, the whole Syrian conflict itself, we're being told that it's an uprising, it's a civil war, and that's wrong right from the onset. That's completely false. What it is terrorists, foreign terrorists, being smuggled in through Turkey, who are receiving funding from the West to do so. These are Al-Qaeda-backed terrorists, Al-Qaeda and the United States, who appear to be working together on this. And they're smuggling weapons in through Saudi Arabia, and they're going in and undermining the country. The Assad's forces have been trying to get rid of these terrorists out of their country, but it's been presented to the Western world as a legitimate rebel uprising to overthrow a dictator. The same as what they did in Libya, which was exactly the same thing. It was actually the same rebels. They just smuggled the Al-Qaeda operatives and the terrorist operatives out of Libya and moved them straight into Syria. So it's the same scenario. And with the recent chemical attack that apparently happened, there's been so much evidence that this was actually an accident. It wasn't actually an attack. It was an accident, but it was chemical weapons that the rebels had that they got through Saudi Arabia. They were very likely British made. And it wasn't Assad at all releasing a chemical attack on his population. There's evidence coming through Russia. There's evidence from all sorts of places, even in Turkey. They've arrested 11 militants who are connected to smuggling sarin gas into Syria. So there's all of this evidence to show very clearly that it was the rebel forces that released these chemicals, and yet the United States is still wanting to go in there and start another war. They're probably kicking themselves that it was exposed, that the chemicals went off in the tunnel, and it was thereby exposed as being the rebels, because I believe the plan had been to launch a chemical attack probably against Israel from Assad-occupied territories. And think about that, if that had happened. I mean, who in their right mind would think that Syria, in the situation that it's in, would choose to attack Israel? It seems to me that's what was going to happen. But the whole thing is really blown up in their faces, and it's really exposed how blatantly and brutally dishonest the United States government is. The United States government is quite literally a rogue government. It's one of the biggest forces of instability in the world today. And it's turned America into a rogue state. The United States of America currently is a rogue state. And that's a shocking thing to have to say, but it's true because of what's going on. I mean, look at this whole Syrian event. This almost created World War III. And Obama and his merry band of cutthroats were in there with bells on, really trying to kickstart this, with no evidence whatsoever. They even admitted they had no evidence. And it was only the public outcry, the outcry of the alternate media, and the outcry of Russia and people like that, saying that we know that you're putting this on and you're staging this, that stopped it. And they're still trying to find a way. They'll keep pushing. They'll keep pushing until they can go in there. They'll keep trying so that they can kickstart this war, because it's the only way they're going to get to Iran. It's the only way they're going to inflame the Arab world enough. And that's the big prize is Iran. That's what it's all aiming towards.
Yeah, because what happened now, at least in my opinion, is that Obama clearly lost his credibility, and somehow Putin was the strong man here, because he was allowed to somehow win this game. But do you actually think that there's a game between Russia and the United States governments, or are both sides belonging to the same party behind the screens? How do you see this?
Look, I think ultimately it's all theatre. They're all working for the same people. I don't think that Putin's the good guy at all. I mean, look at the guy's track record. But I think he had to come up and say, hey, he had to go get up and flex his muscles, because the whole world knew. The world was in complete outcry about this before Putin said anything. You know, the alternate media was just going crazy with this information, and the public were totally up in arms about it. Everybody was speaking out about this, and it got to the stage where it was so obviously staged. You could see there were so many holes in it. That how are they going to stop it? How are they going to prevent World War III from happening? How are they going to? Because if they had, I mean, if they'd gone in and dropped bombs on Syria, I reckon the United States would have erupted into civil war. I think the public outrage would have been so strong that it would have brought down the U.S. government. They would have been removed from office within days of making the first strike. So how are they going to back down without losing face? How are they going to make it look like it was a whole global decision? You know, well, get Russia involved, you know. I think a lot of it is theatre. I mean, I don't think Russia's a good guy at all. I really don't. I think that there's a much bigger play here. And I think they want to bring down America as well. I think that's a lot of it. I think they wanted the world to see that it was a false flag. Because America has to fall. They want America to fall because it's part of the plan. They have to bring America down. America's been a bastion of freedom for the world, so we believe. It's supposed to be the freest nation on earth. But look what it's become. We've got the worst type of crime. We've got the highest murder rates. We've got the highest rate of imprisonment. We've got the most outrageous pornography. We've got warmongering. We've got pollution and chemicals, and the main export of America seems to be chaos and destruction. And this is what happens when you give a nation freedom, you see. So we can't allow mankind to be free, because if we do, they'll end up like America. You know, so it's got to be seen to fail, because this is so obvious. I mean, this is, the whole world was up in arms about this. Every man, woman and child could see that this was a complete farce, this whole, you know, attempted attack on Syria. The only people who couldn't see it were the citizens of the United States, because what they're fed by their controlled media, the corporate media in the United States, is very, very powerful. And the only people in the world that couldn't see this was a false flag was the citizenry of the United States. So again, this puts the blame on the people for the problem. You're going to let your terrorist government go and create World War III while you're sitting there saying it's a good thing while you watch your football and eat your steaks, you know? What a decadent race. Let's get rid of these people. These people are terrible. Look what they're letting their government do. You see, it's all staged. So, you know, I think it's an attempt to wipe out freedom. That's what America's has really been put there for, to create this military machine. And it's a very, very wide plan, you know. It's sort of got a lot of angles that they're looking at it from. But American can be used to create a global police state and completely remove freedom from the entire planet simply by the way the rest of the world views America. So, you know, we've got to be careful and look at how this is being played.
That will also give a role for the FEMA camps in the United States, I think, because you know, there are many of them, and there are even foreign soldiers now on the U.S. ground. So, yeah, it makes sense to see what the purpose might be for these camps. What is your idea about?
Oh yeah, they're there for some reason. They're definitely there for some reason. We'll see. They'll end up with people in them anyway because of, you know, the amount of poverty in the United States. There's so many homeless people in the United States now, and there's like twice as many empty homes as there are homeless people though. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? That there's all these homeless people and there's all these empty homes. But once you reduce people to this state where the only jobs they can get are in the entertainment industry or in the military, and people have to steal to survive, and society turns to chaos and starts eating itself, and the financial system crashes and all this sort of stuff, well, they're going to need the FEMA camps to put people in. Once people start rising up against the government, they're going to need FEMA camps to put people in. And if America goes to war with Syria, if they send that nation to another war and put the American people through another war, I wouldn't be surprised if it does erupt into civil war. And again, that's what the American people want. I mean, that's what the American government wants as well. What's what the banking cartels want. They want that uprising. They want civil war because, you know, let's face it, the government's got better weapons and they got all the places to put the rebels as well. You know, they've got all the camps there and order ab chaos. You know, they need the chaos to create the order that they want. So they'd like to see the place erupt into civil war because they like violence. Violence always leads to their goal. This is why when you see a protest march and it's a peaceful protest, the police always come in riot gear and they push the people into violence because once it turns violent, they can control the situation. They can arrest people. They can break up the demonstration. And it's the same thing with a civil war. Once the people turn violent, it gives them the opportunity to crack down on them. And it gives them the excuse to crack down on them with the utmost ferocity. So, you know, you've got to be careful with what you're doing. I don't think civil war will solve anything. I really believe unity and respect would solve everything in one day if we chose to go that way.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe there's a nice bridge to the logo you have on your website. I think it's a very remarkable painting or art form, maybe. And there are two ways to see that logo. Either it's a kind of positive image and the other one is a more negative one. The negative one is that, humankind is becoming more and more like a machine. And the other one, the more positive one, is that we actually are awaking now from the matrix or the machine and we're breaking free. I have an idea already, but like you say too, what is your, do you see this half empty here or half full?
Well, look, it's a hard one. I see it as half empty, I think, or half full. I don't know. It's a hard one. It's really hard. It's a difficult thing because we could go either way. We're walking along the edge of a knife. We really are. And we have a huge choice here. It's a very, very significant time in history and we're at a pivotal moment in history. And we could go either way. I try to keep it positive. I believe that we will go the positive direction. But then we've got things like Fukushima. We've got things that are causing a lot of trouble around the world to deal with. So you've got to wonder, you know. But I don't think we'll be locked down to the extent they want to lock us down. I don't think we'll allow it. I really don't. There's too much life left in the human spirit. And we keep moving the goalposts. No matter what they try to do with their whole transhumanist agenda, the whole thing they're trying to lock down, you know, the whole control grid they're trying to put in place and lock us down with, we just keep moving the goalposts. We're too creative for that. And that's what they really try to stamp out is the creativity. That's why we're so regimented, why the education system is designed to produce clones. You know, they want everyone to think the same way and look the same way and act the same way. And they have a choice between A, B, C, or D activities, you know. So, you know, they're trying to lock down the human creative spirit, but I don't think they can. I think we will always invent a way out of whatever they try to create. And I think the biggest danger that we're facing is by ignoring what's going on in the world around us. Ultimately, that'll be the biggest problem. We may create a situation whereby our environment becomes untenable for human survival. I think that's the biggest problem. I think that'll happen before we get really locked down into a police state. I don't think that the police state will really happen. They'll try, and they are trying. They're really, really pushing it. But so many people are waking up now. You know, the more they push it, the more mistakes they're making, the more they're stumbling, and the more obvious it becomes. And I think people are waking up. There's a lot of people making noise about it now. So I think it's only going to be a positive future. We're going to have a lot of mess to clean up, but I think it will be a positive future.
Yeah, let's continue with Fukushima because I think it's really worrying what's happening there. And you're living closer by to that area than I do because I live in the Netherlands and in Europe. What is your latest information about the situation there, Max?
Well, I think they've just had a tsunami hit there or a typhoon hit there. So I'm waiting to hear what sort of damage that has done. Because that's been the big fear since it happened was, you know, it's a very, very volatile area where it is. It's very prone to earthquakes, very prone to big storms, very prone to tsunamis. And it's a very dangerous situation. Fukushima, I mean, it's a potential extinction level event if we don't fix it. I mean, it won't kill the planet, but it'll kill us. It'll kill human life. It might take a long time to do, to kill everybody, but eventually it will do a lot of damage to animal life on this planet and human life on this planet. I think the trees will be fine, the insects will be fine, they'll just mutate and Earth will go through its new stage. I don't think it'll kill the Earth, but it will kill us if we don't pay attention to it. So it's anybody's guess what we can do with it. That's the problem. I've thought long and hard about what I would do if I was in charge of Fukushima, and I really can't think of any way to fix the situation apart from, you know, a large nuclear bomb or something that's going to drop the whole place down below the crust or something like that. I mean, I don't know. But then I don't know why anyone would even invent uranium. To me, it doesn't make any sense at all to even make this stuff. So, you know, I think it's always been an accident waiting to happen, uranium. And I think it's one of the most stupid things we've ever done is invent something like that. So, yeah, your guess is as good as mine what we do with that one, brother.
Yeah, I don't have any solution either, but I think the company that's responsible there, I think it's called TEPCO, kept it quiet for too long while they knew it was totally out of control. And only recently they admitted that it was out of control. But yeah, it's more than 2 years later now, so I think it's very dangerous.
Well, yeah, well, we told them that it was out of control. We all knew it was. And again, I mean, it's bad that what TEPCO did, but again, I mean, these are U.S. reactors. These are GE and Westinghouse reactors that should never have been put there to begin with. I was on a show earlier today, and I mentioned to the host that if you actually got a map and you looked at all the tectonic plates and you looked at all the seismic activity on this planet and you worked out the exact worst place in the world to put a nuclear reactor, it would be Fukushima. So why was it even there? Why are all those nuclear reactors in Japan, all those old Phase 1 American nuclear reactors, 52 of them, in an area the size of California, on the conjunction of four tectonic plates? You know, and you can never fully decommission a nuclear reactor. I mean, what do you do with the fuel? What do you do with the spent rod? You got to keep them cool for the next 30,000 years. So why do we use this stuff? Why was this stuff invented?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have no answer to that. I know there is technology from Nikola Tesla and Victor Schauberg and many others that has been kept secret and is still being kept secret that can solve the energy crisis really, really quickly. But somehow there is a lot of interest in not telling us about it. So,
well, commerce, brother. It's all about commerce, isn't it?
Yeah, money, money, money. Mm. That makes the world around, they say.
Sort of tell us.
Yeah, when I found out about this, I think it was about 2007, 2008, I got really angry with everything that I thought that was connected to the system, and I tried to fight the system. After a while, I discovered that by fighting the system, I only make it stronger, so I waste my energy, and I accomplish the opposite of what I want to accomplish. So, and that's also the message you give out in your website and your videos. Don't fight the system, just unplug yourself, disconnect to the system. Can you explain a little bit of what people actually can do?
Well, that's the thing as well. I mean, the system's fiction. It's a meme. It just exists on paper. It's a cloud. You know, if you fight it, you give it substance. You're fighting something that doesn't actually exist. It's just an idea. You know, the government doesn't really exist. The government is just rules written down in a book. Just men with suits go to buildings and they do what it says in these books. And we call that process government. So it's a weird thing. And I've found that the best thing people can do is to discover themselves, to understand who and what they are, and to realize that all men and women on this planet are created equal, and that no one has a right of ownership over anybody else. Because what we've got here is a system of people farming, human trafficking. That's what our government, our corporate government system is, because it's all corporate. Everything's corporate. So you've really got to just step above that, step above the commerce. This is why I don't have anything for sale on the Crow House. Everything I do for free. I give all that I can, and people give to me, and it just works that way. It's a trade of energy that I try to use in my life. I mean, we're all in a situation where we have to spend money. We're forced to pay to be here. But if we can become aware of that and start reconnecting with the people around us, we can bring the whole thing down. it's got to be done at a grassroots level. There's no piece of paper you can fill out, which is going to establish your freedom. There's no movement you can join, which can establish your freedom. Not unless you know that you are free within your heart. And once you know that, then you can start to question people in the right way. You don't have to fight them. You just got to question them. Always remember that the people you're dealing with are just people. They're just flesh and blood, the same as you. No one has any right of ownership over you. No one has any jurisdiction over you. And if we can get this attitude into the minds of the common man and the people around us, we'll be able to stand up as a community and simply say, hey, we're going in a different direction now, and we can invite the government to come with us or get left behind because there's strength in numbers. But that's why I said before, it's got to come down to respect. See, we're not going to do this. We're never going to have a united community until we can learn to respect each other. And we're never going to respect each other until we can truly learn to respect ourselves. Very often we don't respect ourselves because we've done bad things in our lives. We've done this. We're not as successful as we thought we should be, or we're not this or we're not that, because we're trying to live up to parameters that this society has constructed for us. And we've forgotten about ourselves. We've forgotten about the art of our own life. We've forgotten about our own unique perspective of reality, which is what we're here to experience. You know, we've essentially forgot who and what we are. And we forgot our purpose. And if we can discover that, rediscover that, and realize that we can't judge ourselves for all of our shortcomings because we were never given an even playing field to begin with, we can start to understand our own perfection, and we can really start to respect ourselves. And then you get that respect for others. And this is a really big hurdle for people. You know, with everything I just said there, people often don't respect themselves until they've collected stuff. They think that's what it's all about. You know, I'm a successful businessman. I managed to rip off everybody around me, and now I've got a fancy car. And they think that this is deserving of respect. Well, why would it be when you ripped off everybody around you to get the car? It doesn't matter if you've got a big house with a big front door. If you had to step on people to get there, why would you respect yourself for doing that? Only because you perceive yourself to be related to that which is external to yourself. You believe yourself to be judged by that which is external to yourself. You believe that your possessions are you. They are who you are. But they're not. They're just stuff. So it's a shifting in perspective. It's a shifting of the paradigm. People have to view themselves differently. And it's a really big ask. It's a huge shift in perspective for a lot of people. But I believe that's what it will take. And that simple shift in perspective, if everybody did it, we'd change the world in 3 seconds without lifting a finger. So to me, that's the solution, you know. And it's very esoteric. I say that and people go, well, you haven't given me any concrete. There's no form I can fill out. There's no thing I can go and pick up or buy which is suddenly going to make me free. You're telling me I have to do inner work. You know, and it's always been said that if you change the inner world, you will change the outer world. Well, that's how you do it. But you've got to apply yourself. You can't just change the inner world and not apply yourself to the outer world. You've got to get involved. You know, and that's been my message since day one. And really, when I look at it, and if you really think about what I just said and see the simplicity of it, I mean, that's how we fix things, and we could fix it all in one day.
Yeah, I think everybody can understand what you say, and it fully resonates with the way I see it. But I think for most people, there's a big step from understanding that and also living according to that, because, yeah, you come in the middle of the world, and yeah, you're faced with what they put on television, what you hear on the streets, and all the rules and regulations that people try to force on you. So it's not that easy for most people to actually live like a free man and act like a free man.
Oh no, it's a huge paradigm shift. It absolutely is. It's huge. I mean, it's a really simple shift in perspective, but it's huge. It is huge for most people because they're very, very locked into this society. And also, when you really start telling them how reality works, a lot of people find it very confrontational because you're basically explaining to them that everything they thought was real about this world is an illusion. And they find this very, very confrontational. And so it's a huge hurdle to overcome. Very, very simple way of fixing things. The problems are essentially very, very simple, the problems that we face. It's all to do with our perspective of ourselves, our perspective of reality. But to shift that program, to break down that programming, it's a very difficult thing to do.
Indeed, it is. I'm trying for a long time now, but making some progress, but it's still sometimes very hard.
Well, it is. I mean, I try on the shows. I mean, this is why I repeat myself so much. I mean, I just calmly try to explain to people that there's a better way, and we all do what we can, brother, and good on you for doing what you're doing.
Exactly. It might be a sidestep to you, but have you any idea where we human beings come from? How did we ever arrive on this planet? And do you have a view on that too? Because that might also help us to understand where we're going to.
Well, look, all we could really do is speculate on that. I can offer my thoughts, but I don't know because nobody knows. It's all speculation. I think if we could do everything I said and we could bring ourselves back online, we could create some sort of human unity and get all the toxins out of our environment and get our higher senses active, I think we'd find out all this stuff. I think it'd be answered for us. I think it all exists there in our genetic memory somewhere. And I think that we have the ability to access that if we were operating to the whole potential that we have. I just don't think we are. But if I was to speculate, I don't think the creation stories work at all. And I don't believe the evolution stories work at all. For a long time, I thought about third-party intervention, alien intervention. And I've also very much considered the concept, and I kind of am more leaning towards this, the concept of panspermia, which is spores from space, like a genomic spores that exist in space that seed certain planets. I think planets may well be seeded. And this would also explain why there are so many different races on the Earth, why there are, you know, Caucasians, why there are Mongoloids, why there are Orientals, why there are Negroids. So there's all these different types of human on the planet. So because there are different types of human and vastly different, I mean, you look at a Negro next to an Oriental, these are very, very different human beings. And I can't see how they would have, you know, evolved, in inverted commas, from a common source. It just doesn't make sense. I don't think they would have taken on the genetic traits of their environment to the extent that they have. I mean, of course, you know, if you take a bird off one island, a flightless bird, take it off one island and put it on a different island, it'll develop different aspects of that same bird, will evolve over generations. It'll develop certain traits that are unique to that particular island based on what it needs. So things do evolve to a certain extent, but I don't think species turn into other species. And I can't see how the genome of man, even if it were taken from one spot and put in two completely different places, I don't see how one would grow into a tall black man and one would grow into a short, olive-skinned Oriental. I just don't see how this could happen from a common genome. And one could turn into a Caucasian and one could turn into a Mongoloid. It just doesn't make sense. So I think panspermia is probably a very, very real possibility. And I would suggest that that's where we probably came from. But again, it's only speculation. I mean, what can I do? I can only speculate. The whole concept that we were created by God from the sand and the whole, I mean, I can't buy into that at all. And evolution, well, evolution just flat out doesn't work. If you look at the nature of apes, you look at the nature of chromosomes, you look how many we've got, how many they've got. There's so many things. I mean, there's so many things wrong with evolution that I don't think we have time in this show to even go through them all. So, so I would lean towards panspermia, but hey, I don't know. I can only speculate the same as everybody else.
I asked the question because a lot of fuss now about the comet that is arriving, I think, end of October or November, called Aizon. And, a lot of YouTube videos try to tell that something is really weird about this comet. And there are also people who claim that it maybe has something to do with what is written down on the clay tablets of Sumeria about the planet Nibiru and the race called Anunnaki. So I thought maybe you would go in that direction with the answer, but you don't. So it's maybe you have something to say about Aizon or what you expect. Or
well, look, I went towards the whole Anunnaki thing for a while. I even mentioned them in the book that I wrote in 2005, but I just don't know. I think that that may be a red herring. I really do, because, I mean, where it comes from, you know, the Sumerian tablets. I mean, Sumer if you look at this civilization, which is a pretty damn dysfunctional civilization, the one thing wrong with it, the basic problem with the human experience in general, really, is the introduction of commerce over the human experience. And this all came from Sumer. These guys, the tablets that they collected the story from, the Anunnaki story, there were thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of stone tablets found in Sumer. And less than 1% of them contained information relating to what Sitchin called the Anunnaki. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the tablets, thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of these tablets, they were all financial statements. They were all to do with commerce. They were business transactions, banking, because the Sumerians were kind of like the Goldman Sachs of the ancient world, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not a very reliable source of information. And I just don't know. I think that humankind is far better than that. I don't think that we've been genetically altered at all. I think that we've been genetically locked down. And I think a lot of the monuments, a lot of the big structures that we found all over the planet, I think we built those. I think we built them when we were online, when we had all our higher senses functioning. I mean, again, it's all speculation. I don't know. I can only say what feels right to me. But the whole Anunnaki story, it did feel right to me for a while, but as I've grown with the research that I've done, and as I've grown spiritually in myself and certain experiences I've had, I tend to question it now. I just really do. I think that we're not that easily manipulated, and we're not that easily genetically altered. And I think, like I said, there's too many different genetic aspects to the human race for us to have come from a singular source, the way all of these stories tell. I think that panspermia is probably a lot more likely. And also the whole Anunnaki thing, it's a very disempowering story. If you really look at it, saying that we were created as a slave race and all of this sort of stuff. I mean, we're a slave race now. Because we're enslaved to a monetary system, we're essentially caught up in a system of people farming and human trafficking. So we're enslaved to ourselves at the moment, but the concept that we were created to mine minerals and resources from this planet, I just don't know. I did for a while. Like I said, I thought it was a pretty likely scenario for a while, but now I just have to question it. But again, like everybody, we can only speculate on all of this. That's why I think it's more worthwhile to concentrate on a path to solution than it is on speculating about how we got here, because we can sit here and talk about that for the next 50 years and we're still going to be in the same spot. We've got to find a way out of where we are, and I think once we do that and we start coming back online through our bodies coming back online by cleaning up our environment, cleaning up what we're consuming, I think that all of these questions will be answered. So I really delved into it for a long time. I mean, I really looked at ancient history, and I really wanted to find out why we were in this state. And finally, after 30 years of it, I realized that I was never going to find out. All I could ever do was speculate, and that what I have to do is recognize what's happening right now and find a way out of this situation. And then, like I said, I think this will all become apparent.
What I really like about your approach, Max, is that it's everybody can do it. You don't have to wait for anything. You don't have to write papers, letters of notice or whatever, like the OPPT people say, or the Freeman Society with claiming your legal person, things like that. It's just a matter of spiritual development, going inside and understand who you truly are, and from that understanding, face the world in a different way. How do you look at all the legal, how do you say, legal projects to change the situation for humankind, like the OPPT? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. One people well, yeah, look, trust.
Yeah, I think it's all fiction. I really do. I was very excited when the OPPT came out and made that original filing, because when you think about how commerce has been imposed over the human experience, That's the real problem, is that we're enslaved to commerce. When the OPPT put out that original filing, and that was made within the commercial UCC world that said, if you be, you are free, I thought, well, if all these people out there who believe this paper-based reality is real are going to go with that system and believe that they're enslaved to commerce, well, here's a filing that says you're free. So, hey, folks, here it is. You're finally free under that system. You're free. And if people had actually grabbed just that filing and stood up and said, yes, we are free, the whole world could have been freed in that moment. But then all of this other stuff got constructed around it. You know, because there were all these people going, oh, no, don't be free. Don't step into your power. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. Don't sign up for this, even though there was nothing to sign up to. But because people delayed, they didn't just grab that moment of freedom that they could have had. Within a week, it got turned into a movement. It got co-opted. Then suddenly everyone's after their accessing their trust, and it all got turned back into commerce, the way movements get co-opted. That's why it can't be a movement. It's got to be an idea. So that's why I thought that filing was good, because it would plant that idea of freedom in the minds of the people. And if you could get mm-hmm. that idea implanted before it was co-opted into a movement, you could have a moment where humankind suddenly became free. And that would be good. But ultimately, there is no movement. There's no piece of paper you can fill out. I saw that filing as possibly a spark that could inspire freedom, could inspire the knowledge of freedom within the minds of the people. Just so that they, do you feel free now? This, look, you're enslaved to a paper-based system. Here's a piece of paper that says you're free. Do you feel free now? Because if they stepped into that moment, they could have been. But, you know, once it gets co-opted into a movement, then it's controllable and it's all over, because you're being led again. You know, you don't want to be led by anybody. You lead yourself, but you don't do that unless you know you're free. So there's no paper you can fill out. There's no way within the legal system to truly establish your freedom, because if you're forced to sign a piece of paper or create some sort of document that states your freedom, how free are you? Why do you have to do that? Why do I have to abide by your rules at all to establish my freedom? Why can't you just show me proof of claim that you have any right of ownership over this vessel that I inhabit? Let's start there, because I'm saying you don't. I'm completely free. And if you're going to stop me, well, I'm accusing you of being a slave trader. Show me proof of claim that you're not. So to me, that's the approach. There's no piece of paper you can fill out. There's no movement you can join. If you don't feel free, then you're never going to be free. It's up to you. It's up to the individual. And that's what we have to do. So, you know, a lot of people write to me asking for help so they can find a way through this convoluted legal system. And I say the best way to find your way through it is to understand that it's fiction. It's just words on paper. You know, your flesh, you don't have to deal with any of it. You are living flesh. Blood flows in your veins. You're not a corporation. You're not a name. You are man, you're mankind, and everything below that is fiction. So that's my thoughts on the whole legal thing and on the OPPD. I mean, it was an idea. That filing was an idea, but what it became, there's no remedy in any movement at all. It's got to be with the individual.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we also saw with the Occupy movement. It started as a nice idea, but then it became actually a movement with all kinds of trouble inside and
Well, it had no direction. It had no direction. People knew there was a problem, and they knew they had to stand up against the problem, but they didn't know where they were going. And because they had no direction, it wasn't about self-empowerment. It was creating a movement. Let's get up and shake our fist at the system. We don't like you. We're going to make you step down, and then we're going to do something, but we don't know what.
Yeah,
so exactly. That's what happened to Occupy. And, of course, it got co-opted. Of course it did. It has to. There is no movement you can join. There is no piece of paper you can fill out. It's in your heart. And unless you can respect yourself and respect others, it's never going to work. You know, that's the solution. That's the dilemma. See, people can't see the forest for the trees. The solution is truly so simple that people just can't do it. They think there must be forms to fill out. There must be a battle to be waged. It can't be as simple as simply putting all the stuff down and stepping away from it, stepping above it. It really can't be that simple, but it is.
Yeah, it's very beautiful, Max, what you're telling. I fully enjoy it. And it's fully in line with what I'm saying, but your wording is so convincing and so clear. It's marvelous.
Well, thank
you,
brother.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying also the work you're doing. I'm a huge fan, so to say. What do you expect for the near future? Will it be actually the World War III coming, or is it not important at all? Is it only mattering what we do and how we stand in our own life?
Well, they're pushing for it. They're pushing for World War III, but ultimately, it is ultimately up to us what we do with our lives. It's the mark that you leave behind, the legacy that you leave behind in what you do. World War III can only happen if we participate in it, if we choose to show up. It can only happen if the soldiers fire their guns. It can only happen if the politicians can still continue to exercise the right of ownership they believe they have over other people. Hopefully people will wake up to that. There's a lot of soldiers saying, no, I won't go and fight for Al-Qaeda because they know that the Syrian rebels are Al-Qaeda. And they won't be Al-Qaeda's air support. They won't be Al-Qaeda's military. They won't fight alongside terrorists. And a lot of people are seeing the United States government for what it is. So I don't know whether World War III will happen in that way. If it does, I think it will be the reverse of what we think. I think the country that will fall will be the United States because it's designed to. They want the United States to fall. They want freedom to fall. They want to be able to lock down the world into a totalitarian system. And the United States won't ever really be able to do that. It'll have to be done from externally. It'll have to be done when the United States falls. It'll have to be done by proving to the world that freedom isn't workable. And that's what I think a lot of this is about. I think they don't really need to wage a big battle to take over the world. I think a lot of it is fear. I think they're just doing it to keep people in fear. I don't think we'll ever have a nuclear war on this planet the way people fear that we will. I think that it will be done through much more insidious means, through business and commerce and marginalization. I think that's how it'll happen. But I mean, they do want to destabilize the whole region, and they're doing it anyway. So they don't really need to go to war, and especially now they've been found out and the cover's been so blown. So they're getting really sloppy, The more desperate they're getting to do it, the sloppier they're getting. Not all of their plans work, They're not all powerful as people think they are. People think that everything every movement that's ever kind of come, anybody who ever speaks out against them and gains any providence is controlled by them, I get people sending me hate mail saying, you can't speak out and say the things you do without being controlled opposition. Oh yeah, really, So they do this. They try to undermine everything. And I don't think they're going to get away with it. I don't think we will have World War III. I think they're trying, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I really hope so, because I think we've seen a demolition going on this planet. But maybe you're right. Maybe the agenda is actually to show humanity that we cannot handle freedom, so that's why we need a totalitarian regime, and that will serve us well. That might be the idea they want to force. Yeah.
Well, this is so obvious. I mean, everything that's happened is so obvious. Everything America's doing is so obvious. It's obvious to everybody except the American people. So, they want to show the world what happens when you allow a nation to be free. And so this is why we have to have these rules. We have to have these things in place. We have to have these nice central banks everywhere. We've got to keep everything in order. Everything's got to be running nice and smoothly. It's all got to run like a machine. It's all got to be like clockwork. Everything's got to be orderly. That's what they're trying to put with people. America's disordered. We can't have disorderly nations, That's why it's happening, because they were given too much freedom. It was too disordered. Look at China. There's none of this stuff. You don't see China going out bombing all these countries and doing all this stuff. You don't see all this pollution and stuff coming out of there. So let's run things that way. They love the Chinese system. They love to put that everywhere, get everybody regimented with all these little uniforms, and we do a little march and calisthenics before we start work and all of that sort of stuff, the way they do. They'd love that. So it's so obvious what America's doing to everybody, and I don't think that's a mistake. I think it's done by design, because they want the world to see the decadence that comes from freedom, which is why they pushed it so much,
Yeah, I think the good example is the right to wear to have arms in your own house, guns and rifles, they have so many shootings at schools and so on to prove that the U.S. citizen is not able to have his own gun, because they kill each other with. So that's an example of the freedom we are not able to handle. So
yeah, of course, of course. And like I said, I mean, America, the big free nation, look what it's done. It's gone out like a jackboot and stomped on everybody else to impose freedom on them, you know, waging peace around the world, you know.
So. And peace and democracy, yeah.
Yeah. Lovely stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Wow. It was a real pleasure to talk to you, Max. Do you have any final advice to the listeners out here? It's mostly Dutch, I think, but I'm hoping to reach out to the whole surface of the planet. Any words you can say before I will announce this for next week?
Well, look, I just really hope that people discover themselves, because I think that is the answer to all of the problems that we face. People are too hard on themselves. They're too down on themselves. They've been trained to judge themselves poorly because they don't live up to the parameters that society has constructed for them. And I think that it's all a myth. We have to put all that stuff aside and realize that we are beautiful. We have an enormous amount of potential. And I often say to people out there that you are a unique expression of creation. Each and every one of you is a unique expression of creation. And so why would you view yourself as being anything less than that? Why would you view yourself as being less than anybody else? Because you are here to experience the experience of being you, obviously, because that's who you are. And no one can be you better than you can. No one can have the perspective that you have. It's completely unique to you. And you are perfect at having that perspective, and you are perfect at being you. So why would you consider yourself to be anything less than perfect? And if you've done the wrong thing in your life, don't worry about it, and don't judge yourself by what you've done, because you were never given an even playing field. You were placed within the parameters of a sociopathic society, and you were told to make it work. But sometimes we can't make it work. So it doesn't matter what you did. It matters what you do from this point. Don't judge yourself over what you did because of the parameters that you were given and told to survive in. So, yeah, it's a psychopathic world. We can't do the right thing in those parameters. Don't judge yourself poorly. Now you know it. Now you know about how the world's run. Now you can see the things you did wrong. It doesn't matter. Now you're aware of it. So it's a gift. It's a gift because now you have the ability to be aware of it, so you have the ability to move forward and to do something completely different. Because you can undo all the damage that you've done, and you can be the person you've always wanted to be. So don't judge yourself poorly, and step up to the plate. Be all that you could be. Realize that your life is about the experience, and it's about the legacy that you leave behind. It's about what you do with the information that comes to you. And now that you've got this information, you can implement positive change in your life anytime you choose to do so. And that's my message to people, and I really hope they take it on board, because we could change this world in 3 seconds if we all decided to participate. And I believe that's going to come, but it'll only come through respect, the respect that I was talking about before. So please do respect yourself, because when you truly respect yourself, you can respect others, and that's when it all happens and it all changes, and it'll change in one day if we can do that.
Wow. Thank you very much. Yeah, your website, thecrowhouse.com, if you want to know more about the guest of today, Max Egan. Maybe to explain it, what is the reason you chose the Crow House as a name? Is there a story behind it, or is some saying? I don't know yet.
Well, it just kind of happened, really. I was in a situation years ago, and my nickname was Scarecrow. And I was doing a lot of artwork, so I just made this website called The Crow House. And crows have always sort of been hanging around me a lot as well. They've always kind of been a bit of a totem in my life. But I'm a bit of a skinny guy, and I was in a game clan with my son. My nickname in the clan was Scarecrow. And I opened the website to display the artwork that I'd made for the clan, and it just turned into a truth portal, and it kept the name. And I kind of liked it. I thought it kind of stuck, because I'm out there crowing about freedom. So it's kind of worked for me. So, yeah, and you'd never expect it to be a truth portal, the Crow House. But, I don't know. It started off as an artwork site, like I said. I never intended it to be a truth portal. But I got to the stage where I thought, well, I just felt guilty not having any truth stuff on there. I wanted to keep it separate, but I thought, I can't do that. So it just evolved into what it is now. And it's interesting, the last place that I've moved into, I've just moved into a shed that someone gave me to rent. And when I came around to look at it, there's wallpaper up on the wall, and over the top of it, there's been all these crows painted in these trees. And when I walked in here and looked at it, I went, oh, it's the crow house. And so, yeah, here I am, Synchronicity wins.
Whoa, what a nice story. Okay, thank you very much, Max, for joining us, for sharing your very empowering ideas, I think. Thank you, all listeners, for joining Pateo Radio. Next week, we'll have another episode of this radio talk show. My guest will then be Matt Presti from the United States of America, and he will talk about the science of Walter Russell. He calls it resilient science. And, yeah, if you're interested, then tune to the same station at the same time. Thank you all, and thank you again, Max, for joining us.
My pleasure, Johan. Yeah.